Y'all doing well today? Good to see you. It's nice to be back here where it's warm. I spent a couple days in Maine this week, and you look out the window in the meeting and it's starting to snow already, and it's like, and they're like, oh, it's warm outside. The high for the day was 30. It dropped down to the teens at night, and I'm not used to that. Unfortunately, my job sends me in a lot of different places, and sometimes you just got to go where the work is. Of this particular time, I went to be in a meeting with the owner of the water utility and got in there, and there's 12 people sitting around the table. Everyone turned to look at me. Apparently, I was the focus of the whole meeting. And each one of those 12 people had a different viewpoint of what I was intended to do when I... Each one of them thought, he's going to fix the problem that we got. And they all thought in a different way. The owner thought I was a magician. I could magically make a $2 million budget turn in. Boom, we'll fix this problem. My boss thought he's the ultimate negotiator. He's going to make this guy's feel that we got it covered and we got their best interest at heart and we'll take care of the problem. The contractor was thinking, this guy's an idiot. Every single engineer I've ever worked with doesn't have a clue what he's doing, and I'm going to have to fix it after the plans are done, and I'll build it the way I want to no matter what. Thinking that, what is my job description here? Because each one of those people thought my job description was different than what I thought it was. You ever have that happen? Do you know what your job description is at work? You ever read it? They're fun to read. Because somebody sits down and tries to think up what you're going to do in your job. And they're never right. Not a single one of them ever understands what you end up doing. They're written in these great verbiose, you know, grand kind of words, and they don't even get close to what you do. Because I sat there and I looked and said, my boss is thinking one thing about what my job description is. When I get back to the office, my coworkers are going to have a whole different view on what my job description is. The clients think my job description is totally different. And then I stopped to think, you know, Judy's got a different one for me. What my job description to her is to work. And yet every one of those different job descriptions that I have to meet has a different degree of expectation on me. And they all have varying needs of my time and my effort. And I have to decide which one I'm going to please and who I'm going to disappoint. In the meeting at the project in Maine, I knew I had to get the job down to their budget. I'm not going to build the building unless they can afford it. Thankfully, they admitted, you did exactly what we asked you to do 6 months ago. We just didn't realize what it was going to cost. We can't afford it. Now, can you help us please build a building that we can afford? It's not what we really want. But it's what we need. How often do we do that in our life? I'd like to have this, but I need this. Because I've got to decide who gets the use of my time, who gets my effort, who gets my attention. And I'll be honest, if it came right down to it, I can get another job. I can't replace her. If it came down to the decision, which one is the most important in my life, I'm not going to choose my job over my wife. Now, that has some odd ramifications because I need that job to make her happy. I hate to say it, but she's grown accustomed to living the lifestyle, and she's not about to change because I don't want to go to work. But we make those decisions because we know that we have responsibilities and we have priorities. And yet, one of the worst things that somebody can say to me at my job is, that's not my job. Oh, nothing will set me off at work worse than anything. I get young engineers that come out of school. They come out with these grandiose ideas that they've been taught. They have a degree and they know everything. They're going to do the best calculations, design the best building, and only do the glamorous work. And then they get a real job. And I have to tell them that there's a difference between what they think their job is and what their job really is. Because whether they believe it or not, their job is to make the president of the company look good. Nothing else. Boil it down. I don't care what it is. Your job is to make the firm look good. If we look bad, we get no work. If we don't get any work, you don't have a job. If he asks you to go outside and wash his car for the pay you, go do it. If he said, can you answer the phone for the next hour? Do it. Because nothing is beneath you if you realize that I am here for one purpose. I am there to make them look good. Now, I can do my best in that process in any way possible. I'm never going to do anything that I think is wrong. I'm never going to do anything I think is unethical. The state of Tennessee and every other state I'm registered in make sure of that. There are civil penalties up to $10,000 and several years in jail if I do unethical things in my job. If that's not enough incentive, I don't know what you need. I mean, they could take away your license where you can't work anymore. I mean, that's the simple one. 5 years in jail, $10,000. I don't know, got my attention. But the worst part is if I do something really bad, somebody's going to die. I don't like that. The thought just kind of bothers me a little bit. You know, I'm not even keen on doing something to make somebody sick. When you deal with plumbing, it's easy to do that. You know, we don't think anything about water coming out of the tap or where it goes when we're done with it, but those things can easily get cross-contaminated and people get sick. We got to make sure we don't do those things. It's all part of the job. If we can realize that we have to do those kind of things in our personal life, why is it we have so much trouble in our spiritual life doing the same thing? We all accepted a job. Do we understand what that job description is? When you took the job, did you know what you were getting into? I'm afraid most of us don't. I know my young engineers, when they get hired, have no clue what they're getting into. It takes about 4 years to train them when they get out of school after 5 years to even be halfway decent at doing a job. We become Christians and everybody expects us immediately to know what we're supposed to do. So what is our job description as a Christian and what are we supposed to do? It can almost be as complicated as the one that I have at work. It could be as complicated or more complicated than the one you have as a mom. I would not want the job description most of you mothers have. It is the most complicated job description there is in the world. It's a 24-hour-a-day job. It never gets a vacation. It constantly goes on. And I don't care if they're 20 years old, you're still their mom. It doesn't go away. My brother is 53 years old, and my mom said, oh, my baby's home. It doesn't matter. That's what being a Christian is. We treat everybody like your mom treats you. No matter where you are, I'm worried about you. No matter what you're doing, I want to hear from you. Because that's what part of the job description is. Have you ever thought about it? I mean, let's look at a few of the qualifications, and I'm not going to go through them all because they're just a few. First and foremost, the job description includes being a teacher. From the very beginning, God always wanted His people to be teachers. If you remember in Deuteronomy 6, starting in verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. And these words I command you today shall be on your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk with them when you sit in your house, when you walk in the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Jesus repeated a similar kind of concept to His disciples in Matthew 28. I'm sure you're all familiar with that, when He tells them in Matthew 28, starting in 18, Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and earth is given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." Because we have to first and foremost be teachers. Because if we don't teach, how will they come to know God? They have to be taught who God is. And the only way that's going to happen is if we do it. We have to teach. We nurses. Our job is to heal the sick and the diseased heart. If we don't do that first, it doesn't matter how much teaching we do. And it may not just be theirs, other people's we have to work on. I'm sick more than the people in the house are all the time. You know, I have to work on myself as much as anything. James says that, "Draw near to God and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your heart, you sinner. Or cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded." And therein is our problem, isn't it? We want to hold on to this world and we want to hold on to the spiritual world. And we have a trouble of which one takes precedence. A sick heart has no place in it for God. It needs to be healed in order for it to accept the truth. Not only do we have to heal, we have to be janitors. We have to clean up our lives and we have to clean up the lives of other people. The psalmist said, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me." Jesus told a parable about that very thing. He said in Matthew 12, starting in verse 43, "And when an unclean spirit has gone out from a person, it passes through waterless places seeking rest, but it finds none. And then it says, 'I will return to the house from which I came.' And when it comes, it finds the house empty and swept and put in order. And it goes and it brings seven other spirits worse than itself. And they enter and dwell there. And the latter state of that person is worse than the first. So also will it be with this evil generation. It does not any good to put away evil if you don't replace it with good." Because Jesus said all that's going to happen is it's going to come back and it's going to come back seven times more. If you think I can just put away the bad things and not replace it with anything else, all you've created is a vacuum and nature abhors a vacuum. Don't know if you've ever tried to take all of the air out of anything. It's almost impossible. There's always something there. It wants something to fill that void, and our heart is no different. We have to be mechanics because we have to fix a lot of things. Jeremiah 26, "Now therefore mend your ways and your deeds, and obey the voice of the Lord, and the Lord will relent the disaster that He has pronounced upon you." After we've fixed it, we've nursed them to health, we've taught them, We have to be motivational speakers, each and every one of us. 1 Thessalonians 5, now therefore encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing. Hebrews 10, 24, 25, 26, 27. You probably know 10, 25 by heart. You know what it says in 24 and 26? Because those two are more important than what it says in 25. Now let us consider how to stir one another up with love and good works. Not neglecting to meet one another as the habit of some is, but encouraging one another. That all the more as we see the day approaching. For if we go on sinning deliberately, after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there is no more sacrifice for us, but a fearful expectation of judgment and the fury of fire that will consume the adversary. We can't do this by ourselves, people. Why are we asked, encouraged to come here every Lord's Day to meet? To work? Yes. To study? Absolutely. But the writer of Hebrews said, I want you to come together to stir each other up for good. I need to be encouraged. I need people to tell me, yeah, you can do it. I need people to say, we're in this together. It's not just you. You ever been away from the family and realize at some point during the week, man, I just can't do this. You feel like I'm all alone. There's nobody else in the world that feels the same way that you do. And then you come here, you realize any congregation anywhere in the world. Have you visited other places in other parts of the world or the other parts of the country? It's amazing. The family of God is the same everywhere. We get focused on this little group here or this little building down the street. Or the church is not in this building, just a small piece of it. Knowing that Vinay is out there and that all of the work is being done in India encourages me to hear all of the things he's able to do. Encourages me to know that the kingdom is growing. And that's part of our job. Not only do we encourage, we are to be a travel agent. You ever thought about that? What's your job? My job is to get you to go somewhere else. I want you to go to heaven. I look at this like Judy does Mayberry Days. For the last, she's encouraged somebody else to go with us every time. And it's always different people. I mean, she's so excited about going that she will bring her picture book from last year and show them all these lovely pictures. And she has an enthusiasm about this event in her life that other people find contagious. I did. I have to admit, the first time she said, it was our 30th anniversary, I said, I'll take you anywhere you want to go. 4 weeks later, I'm waiting. Okay? I know she's got to be thinking about this. Are we going to go to Hawaii? Are we going to go to Alaska? Go to the beach? And she sheepishly came up about 5 weeks after I asked and said, you're not going to believe this, but I want to go to Mount Airy, North Carolina. Never heard of the place. Where is this? It's a little town of about 40,000 people in the north part of North Carolina. I said, okay, why are we going? She said, there's a thing called Andy Griffith Days they do every year in September, and I want to go. That's all I wanted to hear. Where do you want to go, right? So I was going the first year because she wanted to go. I have been the last 6 years because I wanted to go. She has encouraged me to like it enough that now I am excited about going. And we talk. Now, something as simple as that, I mean, you all have places you go that you want other people to attend, right? You know, Tim and Margie once got us to do some great stuff in Vegas because they've been there a lot and they knew. So, oh, you got to see this, you know? We do that in our life. Why don't we do that about heaven? Why aren't we as excited? You've got to go. Mainly because we don't think that's part of what we need to do. We are to be social workers. In Deuteronomy, he told the Israelites, there will never cease to be poor in the land. Therefore, I command you, you shall open wide your hand to your brother, to the needy, to the poor of your land. We are to be chefs, to provide nourishment for the hungry and the people in need. Matthew 25, we read the story of those that came to judgment, and it said, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. And I was in prison, and you came to me." And if all of those aren't enough, we read in Ecclesiastes everything else that there is to do. Ecclesiastes 3 says, "For everything there is a season. There's a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that was planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and time to sow, a time to keep silent and a time to speak. There is a time to love and there is a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace." We need to realize that there is a time for everything under heaven, and we've been asked to do it. If you want to try and write the entire job description we have as Christians, the list is about, thick as the New Testament. Do I do every task in my job description every single day? No. Do I do every task in my job description at work every month? No. But over the course of the year, I probably get to all of them. That's the way Christianity is. Are we expected to do all things all at the same time? We couldn't do it, could we? If you turn back and look at your life and see what you've accomplished, how many people have you helped that you don't remember now until you stop to think about? How many people have you taught? I'm not saying you have to sit down and be a class teacher. That's not the way Jesus taught. Jesus taught one-on-one, two-on-two, 12 sometimes, sometimes 5,000 or 10,000. Whoever's there, that's all it took. And sometimes his teaching was as simple as kneeling down and writing in the sand. He didn't give a long speech. He just let them reflect on who they were and what they'd done. And then he showed compassion and love, and that's really all it's about. I know it seems to be an awful lot to do, but if you stop and think about it, the retirement benefits are out of this world. So, if you need to remember that, if nothing else, our only purpose here is to make our boss look good. If we can make Jesus look good to everyone around us, we've done our job. No job is beneath us. Nothing is too menial for me to do. Jesus washed the feet of the disciples. The King of heaven washed their feet. I can do anything. We are servants and children of the King, and we should remember that. If you'd like to join us in doing the work here, become a member of Christ's body, to take on this daunting task of being a Christian, if you just need some help doing the work that you've been asked to do, come now as we stand and sing.